Ever wondered what goes into making Drive to Survive? Well, this is the Fast Talkers podcast for you. I'm Jenny Gow, and I'd be delighted if you subscribed. Hello and welcome to a special Fast Talkers episode as we try and take you behind the scenes of everybody's favourite Formula One programme. It is, of course, Drive to Survive Season 3, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by a very special guest.
I'm Nanook Walter, and I'm the series producer of Drive to Survive.
Nanook, it's lovely to have you here. Thank you for coming on to Fast Talkers. Now, we all know the big drop happened at 7 o'clock Friday morning, which means people have binged potentially now the whole of Drive to Survive Season 3. It's a corker, isn't it?
The success of it still, I think, surprises us from what is in some ways a bit of a niche sport, F1. Like, we seem to somehow hit a vein and people really love it. I mean, we love making it and we're really happy that people receive it so positively on the whole.
Now, you've been with the team since the early days. I remember seeing you in the paddock. So how did you get involved in the project?
I was there from the very start in 2018, all of us are principally freelance. So as a freelance director, got to know Box to Box. So I've got in there as a sort of what we call producer director for the first season. And yeah, never left, kind of on my feet in it, really enjoyed it as well. And I think we've been sort of building from season to season. So now it feels like a bit like my baby. It's all of our babies. It's a massive team effort. But obviously, I think all of us who've done it from the start are just very invested in it.
How many people are there on the team? Because obviously in the height of production, there's so many of you. And then COVID came along, so that might have altered things. So what's the core group?
We're sort of quite a fluid team. We sort of, because in twin, we can't be at every race with every team. That's always a hard thing in general. And I know sometimes fans accuse us, I can't believe you haven't, you didn't cover this, didn't cover that. And sometimes I know we just can't tell every story and always be with the right team at the right time. Although we've become relatively good at anticipating and often being with the teams. So primarily we choose a few teams to embed with, while also reacting to kind of what happens then in a race. So, and we alternate between smaller staffed races where we feel like kind of might be anywhere 4 or 5 people to then to 16, sometimes 20 people in the past where we follow several teams. And so obviously we have DOP and sound recorders and camera assistants and sort of location producers, all sorts. But it's very fluid depending on our needs. The primarily like to try to follow a story. So, and now that's with Corona, we had to adapt a lot. But so Formula One have given us a more restricted number of places that we can bring to the paddock, like everyone. The same applies to the F1 teams, where we just have to make it work. And where before we could sort of fluidly react to, and then we've made these relationships with teams where we could then pop into a garage to get a bit here, or like after a race or during a race when they're like sort of on the verge of winning, that's not possible anymore because of these COVID bubbles. So we have to commit to a team, stay with them, and then for better or worse. But on the one hand, that's been quite an advantage as well, because we now wear team kit when we're in with the teams. We live with them, so we eat with them, and you do blend in a little bit more, and it's given us almost an extra level of intimacy and being part of the team than it's been before, despite having always had sort of good relations with them. And then we always have like another floating team, which is sort of, we have one team that's designated in the paddock to pick up all the little incidental bits, and those kind of, it's the little moments, it's the little chats in the paddock. It's often, we love the little off-the-cuff moments, the things that happen around sort of the main event. So is it before an interview with the press, there's a little chats, or kind of drivers, team principals bumping into each other. So got now kind of a designated team to kind of just sort of scour the paddock and try to get these moments.
It's always slightly unnerving for me as a pit lane reporter, certainly in the first two seasons that you were in the paddock, because you'd be talking with somebody, you might be in the middle of a broadcast in the pit lane, and all of a sudden you just have this huge zoom going over your head and dangling in front of you. So you'd be speaking into your mic and then there'd be this other mic and you're like, hang on a minute, what's going on? Basically, you had the no restrictions. You could record anything, you could be across anything that you guys needed to be.
Oh, I mean, to be honest, Formula One are hugely supportive, and so are the teams, and that's actually improved over the years. I mean, it's a very secretive sport, and when we all came into it in 2018, teams were suspicious. Nothing like this had been done before. Some saw the value straight away, like Haas, for example, who've been quite open doors and think, like, let's do it and let's do it properly, like, sort of no holds barred. I mean, Günther's become a star out of it, and I can genuinely say he doesn't put it on for show. He's just put a radio mic in on him, and he gets on with it. And obviously, so we've built these relationships in terms of booming these sort of conversations. Every year, it gets a little bit easier. Do get the odd, like, sort of pissed off looks, but we're sort of, I mean, it's part of the game. And I think everybody at the same time, people like being on it as well. I know even the journalists that we filmed, I was like, oh, how come I wasn't in the last season and so on. We don't do it deliberately. It just depends on the content that we capture, obviously, what they're saying. But I think it's kind of, we've managed to become part of the furniture of F1. And so people are accepting it and playing. We play with them a bit, they play with us. We don't want to disrupt the moment when it sort of happens, so we go in. But when somebody tells us to, please don't record this, then of course.
Yeah, you have to have the utmost discretion, I think, and know when and how to read a situation in Formula One. When you first came into the paddock, presumably you hadn't been in a paddock before for Formula One.
No.
What were your expectations and what was the reality?
The paddock's quite like it's its own sort of beast. I think this sort of the paddock is this sort of weird sort of traveling circus. Everybody knows each other really well. They spend every other weekend with each other, but it's almost like a little microcosm that but then sort of just gets transplanted around the world. And it's almost like get to know them. You got to become part of it. It's like sort of the high school cafeteria where who do you sit with, you know? But at the beginning, so it's kind of like finding our feet. I'd watched Formula One so from a young age. So I loved Ayrton Senna. I had like a good friend of mine whose mom worked in Formula One for many years. So kind of when I was younger, and then there were the Schumacher years in Germany. So that was big. But like many people, I'd lost interest a little bit. I hadn't watched it so much before coming back to this. And we kind of found this whole other side to it, which is the politics, the intrigue. And it's unique in almost, you don't see it in any other sport. Say football, the teams are kind of, they all do their own thing, and they've got all these national leagues with like 18 to 20 teams each. Here it's 10 teams that travel around the world and always see each other. It's a cool setup, but it definitely is a daunting place to walk into, and you got to earn their respect and trust. And hopefully we've done that, I feel. I mean, got to be a bit cheeky. I think we always sort of try to push the agenda a little bit, but ultimately we want to do it for the good of everyone. What we do is celebrate Formula One. It's an aspirational show. We want to bring a new audience to it. We don't want to screw anyone over. We love a bit of drama. I mean, that makes the show, but ultimately I think it's good for anyone. And I think we're sort of friendly enough with everyone that they sort of are up for this.
I mean, you certainly got a bit of drama with the latest season. The plot twists, the fire for Romain Grosjean, the survival, all of that meant for, I think, it's a thrilling season, isn't it? To watch, to sit down, if you're binging it, if you've already binged it, you can't stop.
100%. I mean, of the 3 years I've done now, being sort of to the majority of races, it's the season I had the best stories. Like, I mean, that's good for us. Ultimately, we can only work with what's there, with what happens on track. Although, so of course, we sort of build around those on the track moments. It's ultimately the racing that is the core of all our stories. And I know 2020 was an amazing one from the sort of sudden cancellation. We were there, I think, for a few months. This is never going to happen. Like, so we're not going to have another season. And then Formula One pulled it off, and hats off to them and the FIA, how well they organized it. How they just were able to keep going. It felt safe and well done. A whole shoot team managed to get through this without a single corona case, which is still a miracle. It was a good one. We had surprise race wins. I mean, I remember having goosebumps when Gasly won that race in Monza. And it's like somebody who we've been filming for 3 years through the ups and downs. I mean, he's had a tough 2019. And then to come back with that race win, that was amazing. And Roman, I mean, again, Haas was my first team I ever filmed with. And like, so I still have done all the filming with Haas. It's always been me. So seeing Roman there, those moments of uncertainty were, I mean, we're all like sort of deeply worried. And luckily, like sort of the broadcast just went black. So I didn't really know what had happened until you see the shot of him coming out again. But I mean, you don't see that in modern Formula One again. You couldn't script that. I mean, that felt like a Hollywood movie when you see the footage of it.
How do you pick the narratives for a season? Because I think a lot of people at home are like, well, why didn't they put this bit in? And what have they done with that bit? That's not how I remember it. It can get quite heated and opinionated. So what's the process, Nanook?
It's again, so it varies and it's hard. And there's always story that I wish we would have told, we could have told, but for various reasons, we can't. I mean, ultimately, we've got 10 episodes. And then we have access to all the teams, but to varying degrees as well. And then it's also like whether you happen to be there with that team when that sort of big story breaks. So sometimes that just doesn't quite happen. We would have liked to do more out of the Claire Williams leaving the team. That doesn't feature like it should, although we feel like that would have been a big story. But we just didn't have access to the teams in transition month. I mean, that was just, it's a difficult time for the team, for everyone. And without sort of all the element, it's hard to tell. But it's also, sometimes these stories come back and we might tell them in the following season, sort of as a framework for something new that has happened. So then don't completely go away. We read all the Formula One news. We sort of do the groundwork in the paddock to do like sort of, you know, kind of what story is going on. I mean, everybody talks and you kind of try to find the interesting stories and then finding ways to tell them visually. It's the other thing. It's easy to write an article about a story. It's much harder to make a documentary where you kind of film the actuality as it happens or sort of get to be there to tell it. So it's kind of, so it's a mix of that. It's luck planning and a bit sort of kind of, so yeah, luck of the draw sometimes. But
I think people were quite impressed with the Perez. I think you managed to be in his dressing room when he was phoning his family to say that he'd won. It was very emotional. Certainly my husband was going, how did they know to be there? How did they get in that room? So how does that come about? Is that luck again?
We're always keen to do Racing Point. They had an amazing season last year and were a really interesting team to watch. So at the end of the season, it's all about them battle for third. So we were with them. Hence, we were able to go into the room because we're part of the team bubble. That sort of gives us access to the room and Checo, and he's a lovely guy. And he was up for sharing that. Obviously, it was an amazing moment. It's again, one of those good fun moments where you have to pinch yourself and say, wow, kind of right time, right place. What a story.
How significant do you think Netflix is for Formula One? I know I've done talks and hosted events where a lot of the people in that room are only at Formula One because of your series.
I'm still surprised. I've done sort of TV, I've been a TV director for over sort of 10 years, long 15, and sort of my friends don't usually just watch something just because I've made it. So it's like, and I'm still surprised like that this is the show. None of them are really Formula One fans so per se, but the amount of positive feedback I get from this, even from younger audience girls, always surprises me because primarily like so, good sort of human stories that you, once you peel away that, so the layers, the helmet, they're kind of like people like you and me, but with obviously quite interesting lives and high stakes sort of jobs. I think it's brought a whole new audience to the sport that now are then interested in the racing and would hopefully then start visiting races, watching the live coverage sort of on Sky and so on. So I think it's a win-win, but yeah, I'm still surprised how many sort of non-traditional F1 fans love it.
You know the paddock, you know the storylines, you're embedded with some of the teams, so you know everything. What is going to be like the talking point? What's going to be the Romain Grosjean of this season?
I mean, it's hard to say. We haven't even done the first race yet, and even testing was probably like one of the most inconclusive ones. There hasn't been a big story in testing. It's the driver's market. It's going to be interesting. It's all eyes on Lewis. And I haven't made my mind up yet if it's just part of the gamesmanship, if he's considering retiring or not. But obviously, that is sort of, I mean, that sort of musical chairs, the dominoes of the driver's market. that's always interesting. And especially in Formula One, where there isn't like a transfer period, it is literally it's wheeling and dealing and people vying for positions. So interesting to see what happens to Lewis and that seat at Mercedes, because that's going to kickstart a whole round of other moves.
Is Lewis quite receptive to you guys? Because certainly the second season, I think it was, when he sat down with you, and sometimes it's you doing those interviews. He seems to switch on to you. He seems to want to be part of the process.
I mean, I have to say, so I did the interview in season 3 and I've done the Mercedes filming, and he's always very polite and I like him. And I definitely see another side to him when we film than I think you see in public. I mean, somebody of his standing and fame is a bit guarded. That's completely natural. But I think there's a really, like, you can see the humble hard worker behind him, and it's been amazing to see glimpses of that. And the interviews, I felt like he was genuinely like sort of open and honest. So the last interview I did, we talked about Black Lives Matter and sort of kind of his journey, and it was like, I really enjoyed the interview. I felt like sort of he really opened up. It is a shame that we'd always like to see more of Lewis, and unfortunately, like, sort of we never quite get as much or as close to him as we would like. But as I said, we understand. I mean, he's a superstar, and a little goes a long way.
Hey, you certainly got close enough to Bottas. I don't know if that was you filming, but the Bottas definitely came out. What a scene.
I know, that was a good one. I'm glad we got that in. Valtteri's lovely. I like him a lot. He's sort of quiet water, sort of run deep. He's kind of, just a really nice guy, kind of like sort of focused and sort of driven in a different way. He's not like sort of the fiery, sort of emotional guy, but there's a real depth to him, I feel. And him at Villa, his manager, saying, look, we're going to film this. We don't want to fake it. You got to be naked in the sauna. it's got to be real. And it was real. I mean, that's why we sort of get ourselves in positions to film these things, because we're working with people of this, of these high profiles. Nobody wants to sort of just pretend something for camera. So ultimately they've got their personalities, their brands.
And their butts.
Yeah, butts.
You guys didn't have to go naked into the sauna, did you?
No, we left the door slightly ajar.
Steamy cameras.
It was a small sauna.
I love that. Finally, we must talk about the Grosjean incident. You've spoken about it a little already, but people will see that as the box office standout event of the season. Do you read it that way as well? Do you think people who don't know about F1 will look at that and go, oh, I must watch this, because look, there's a massive explosion.
It was incredibly spectacular. But it's also, I mean, you don't see these things in Formula One anymore. So like that by its nature, of course, was newsworthy and sort of fireballs attract attention in that sense. But I mean, this is only because it, like, we were able to show it like that and sort of feature in that way, because like, he survived miraculously, barely scathed, and he was very open and willing to talk about it, I think. So we wouldn't have sort of featured it to that degree if Roman wouldn't have fully bought into it. And so we filmed with him afterwards. He wanted to tell a story in an interview next to his wife, which was really nice to see.
That was hilarious, because the face that she pulls, it's just like, here we go again. Here's Roman. It was brilliant.
I love it. I mean, they're so sweet together. And again, sort of like seeing them with their family. These are like sort of kind of apex athletes who are like so focused. I mean, imagine getting back into the car after seeing like a fellow driver crash like this and having to drive a race. I mean, like, I couldn't, but they do that. But then like you see them with their family and so on, and you see kind of the softer side, the human side. And I think that's what makes them relatable. And I know Mavion flew out, they wanted to talk. We have to get them in together in the interview. We need to see them together. So it was a really sweet moment. I mean, just, yeah.
Slightly cathartic for them, I think, just talking it through and realizing that they could hold hands, be together, the family was safe, they were safe. I think it was part of the process for them.
Yeah, it felt like it. I mean, I never felt like we pushed Roman to do something that he's uncomfortable with. And that was very important to us, because, I mean, even those days afterwards, so if we didn't sort of go chasing for an interview, lucky, I've got a very good relationship with Haas, and have known Roman for years from filming. So they wanted to tell their stories and obviously did other interviews as well. But I feel as well, like sort of it was a big moment for him. I mean, he told us he'd almost like sort of, he's born again. He sort of found like, you must come out of that thinking like sort of have a new appreciation for life and what is in your life by coming so close to death. Seeing like shows how safe Formula One has become. It is incredible if you think about it that you can escape like a fireball like that. And that's we're all used to seeing archive footage of these crashes in the 60s, 70s when you crash and you most likely died. Luckily, yeah, come a long way.
Yeah, it never ended like that before. We've come, as you say, come a very long way. And there were some very brave people that weekend, and Roman did his part as well. I'm delighted to be part of season three. I enjoyed the process. It's a weird process, isn't it? Because you're having to kind of go through it and remember what's happened and talk about it, and you're not quite sure what bits you're talking about necessarily. So it's a funny old game playing it.
It's been really great having you on board as well. And obviously Will's been sort of in it for a while, and it's great to sort of expand on that and have you. And I think it's added another level as well. So it's another perspective. It's such a jigsaw, this show. That's why. And we don't really use voiceover. So it's quite complicated stories to tell. And the way like the access works, everything you film, it's quite pity. So we just need somebody to put it into context and explain a little bit what's going on. I think you and Will have done a great job at that. But there you see a little bit our process of how we try to weave together these stories that often we film over months or even the entire season.
Yeah, it's pretty complex. Yeah. And finally, a word for the fans, because there are so many of them across the world. Is there anything you want to share or you'd like to say to them?
Well, I just want to say thank you for watching. I mean, like I said earlier, we are like really amazed how many people really seem to love the show, and we really like making it. I mean, it's probably the hardest show to make that I've ever worked on, just because of the nature of the access. And so, but it's also, it's an amazing challenge and a really cool thing. And we just love creating something that people seem to like so much. So yeah, thanks for watching.
It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. I hope I see your smiling face again soon in the paddock.
Thanks, Jenny.
But here's to season three. If I had a drink, I would chin-chin you. It's been a delight working with you. Thank you.
Same. Hopefully more to come. See you soon.
Thanks for listening. Remember, if you've enjoyed it, then subscribe and keep yourself up to date with Fast Talkers.